Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 18, Episode 53. This is Writing Excuses, funding the writing life.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we want to get paid.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
And it just occurred to me that this is our last episode of the year, which I think is a great time to think about. You know, it's holidays, it's making resolutions, it's thinking about what you want. And one of the things that we want is, as Howard said, to get paid. And so how do we actually get money for writing? I think there are a lot of ways that writing and the skills that we use in writing can actually end up with money in our pocket. And so I wanted to explore some of these. And so I think the easiest one is getting paid for your words directly. Don, I feel like this is something...
I love how you say that's easy.
Good point.
It's the most obvious, right? Yeah, the most obvious is, you know, you write a book, you get an agent, you get it published by a traditional publisher, you get paid in advance, right? Like, that is sort of the most traditional path, as we've alluded to. It's not always an easy one. And, you know, one thing to think about as I think sometimes a thing that happens is you hear, oh, so-and-so got a six-figure deal for their book. And it's like, great. A six-figure deal is amazing. Everyone should be really excited about that. This is not me taking wind out of anybody's sails. But also you need to remember that that money is going to be portioned over a very long period of time. You get paid a portion on advance. You get paid when you deliver the book, and you get paid when the book is published, and then usually paid, or not usually, but often paid when that book is in a second format, paperback. So that money can be spread out over, at the fastest pace, 4 years or 3 years, can be up to five, you know, depending on how fast you write, depending how fast the publication cycle goes. So that money, that $100,000, incredible amount of money, 15% of that is coming off the top to your agent. And then from what you receive from that, a portion that's going to the government, right, for taxes. So now your actual living income is in the neighborhood of more like $50,000 to $60,000 spread out over 3 to 5 years. That suddenly looks a lot less like a living wage when you really map out how long it takes for that first book income to hit. Now, as you have more books, you can have more regular payments. Hopefully you're getting royalty payments from older books, and that really helps even things out over time, but it takes years and years and years to get to a point where you can be really stably dependent on your traditional book publishing income.
And I actually want to preface all of this with the imposter syndrome problem that we see with writers and artists of all stripes, which is this idea that we tend to undervalue our work.
Absolutely.
Mm. And you wrote a thing, you deserve to get paid for it. You know, you may be, you may decide to self-publish and you list it on Amazon and you tell yourself, nobody would pay more than 99 cents for this book. And the answer is, well, if you list it at 99 cents, then nobody's going to pay more than 99 cents for that book. Mm. But if you wrote a book, you deserve more than 99 cents for it. Yeah.
This is why you need someone like me who's constantly telling you, you're being undervalued for your work.
Exactly. But I want to lead with that because you will almost always undervalue your own work. Whatever you think your writing is worth, that number's probably too low. Mm-hmm. That's good news. That's really good news. It means you're worth more than you think you are.
That said, there's also a thing that happens to people who have the dream of being a career writer, mm-hmm. where they overestimate how much money their writing is actually going to bring in. So we've talked about traditional publishing route. You can also do self-publishing. There's a bunch of different ways. But the main thing that I want people to understand is that as a writer, you are a freelancer. And the key maxim for a freelancer is diversify your income stream.
Yes.
And so what we're talking about today is all of the different ways that you can bring in writing. Money from your writing, whether or not it is sending the words out.
Almost every single writer that I work with who does not have a day job, who's writing full time, has diversified their income stream in a variety of ways, whether that's writing in other formats, whether that's speaking appearances, school visits, frankly, having a partner who is providing healthcare or some financial stability, right? There's a lot of different ways that people are able to have the life where they are writing as their primary, or not even primary, only job.
And I think there are a way to frame this is that there are sort of two things as a freelancer that you can get paid for.
Yes.
One is the work that you produce, and two is what you bring to the table as the type of person who can produce it. And I think that's true for writing as well.
Yeah.
So thinking about the things that you just listed off, things that are like being paid for your direct writing, that's like the book, you're getting paid. Being paid for other writing you can do in other formats is one way that can often be like the, I don't want to say easy, but it seems like you know how to write creatively. Now you're going to figure out how to write creatively in games. So I personally like started doing writing in tabletop games because I was like, I love world building. A lot of tabletop is world building. How can I take this skill that I already have and do it in a different way? And I know you've had like clients who've gone into like comics, mm-hmm. and other formats where you're taking your creative mind and doing just a slightly different format with it.
Yeah, I have several clients who write in games as well. I don't know if I have anyone who does tabletop. One person who does tabletop, but a lot of video game writing. I have three or four clients who write for video games, either as freelancers or sometimes full-time, depending on the role. I have a bunch of clients who've gotten into writing for comics, right? Some of that is doing their OGNs, or original graphic novels or limited series that are original IP. But a bunch of them are doing a bunch of work for the big two as well, right? Writing DC, writing Marvel comics. My client Alyssa Wong has written on Dr. Aphra for many years, is doing Deadpool now. My client Sarah Gailey is launching the new White Widow solo title coming up in a few months. So there's a lot of work that's happening in the comics world that is good freelance opportunities that can really bulk out your writing income. And because writing a comic script is a different pace and a different style than writing a full novel, it can fit into your workflow in a way that it'll be between edits. It'll be between that period when you've sent your novel in, you're waiting for feedback, or you're waiting for the publication cycle. There are ways you can really schedule out the rhythm of your writing life to make space for comic script writing in addition to the prose that you're working on.
One of the tips that I lean into pretty hard is, and it begins with the strategy of never throw anything away.
Mm-hmm.
That fanfic you wrote when you were 15, that Star Wars fanfic, after a certain point, you've got some writing chops. You can open something like that up and realize, oh, wait, I can file the serial numbers off of these pieces, and there is a plot, and there are some characterizations, and if I reverse this, and if I change that and change that, oh my goodness, I have this whole new thing. I imagine myself sometimes as, you know, as a woodworker who has a garage full of things that are half nailed together, and then along comes this client who needs a set of cabinets, and I walk into the garage and I say, what looks like cabinets? Ooh, that kind of looks like cabinets, and that, and pull it to the table, and boom, I make it. Your boneyard has enormous value. Don't throw anything away.
I think also, though, with your boneyard, as you're in there, figuring out how the skeletons of different formats work and how to put the bones you have into the skeleton that you need it to fit into.
Exactly.
So sometimes people will be like, well, that was great to tell me to just become a game writer, but how do I do that? Seems rough. And part of it is that you have to learn a little bit about that format.
Yes.
It's unlikely that someone will trip over you in the street and be like, I want you to write the new, you know, Dragon Age game. We all wish, but no. And so what you do is, if you like games and that's something you think you might want to go into and it's tabletop, write a quick scenario, write something up and try to like put it somewhere and see if somebody will buy it on itch.io or like even
make
give
a twine
you
game,
feedback.
You know?
Make a Twine game if you want to do interactive. Try playing, and that will let you know, number one, is this something that fits into your schedule, or does it just make your brain not like writing at all? And also, is this something that you can... you think you can do well? And thirdly, if you are in the position, like you see a job posting or you see something going on, you're following people, I would say, on whichever social media still exists at the time that this airs, follow people who are doing that kind of work, then you can actually say, okay, I have something to show you because I went and made something on my own. And with that, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about how to just get paid for being your lovely, wonderful self.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge, and I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/WX. Hey writers, are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money at Menards.
This week, I want to talk to you about a movie. I saw a film earlier this year called Joyland. It's been a pretty incredible year for cinema, but this one is, for me, a real contender for the best thing I saw this year. It's a film by a director named Saim Sadiq. It is his debut film. It is the story of the youngest son in a Pakistani family. In a very traditional family, who's under a lot of pressure to get a job. And he ends up as a backup dancer for a Bollywood-style burlesque company, dancing as the backup dancer to a trans woman. And he really falls into this woman's orbit. It is a story that is of incredible queer joy and experience and community. It is also about the tension of living in a traditional family and the things that tie you to that family, the bonds of love and connection and relationship, and also the enormous amount of pressure that conflict puts on the younger generation and the people around you, and in particular the way in which that the women of this world are forced to carry a lot of the emotional weight of the people around them. It's a very, very beautiful movie. It is a joyful movie. It is an incredibly tragic and sad movie. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I sobbed through the whole last act of it, and it is an incredible, incredible film. Please go see it. That, once again, that is Joyland by Saim Sadiq. One thing I want to flag about the conversation we were having right before the break is that I do also want to make sure that we acknowledge that these are full careers in and of themselves, right? So we've talked about them as side things that writers do, and it is true that for many writers that is happening, but it does require its own networking, connections, attention, and craft, right? And also understanding and respecting that there are people who do this full-time, it is their primary career. And, you know, just because it may be a side gig for one person doesn't undermine that in any way. But a lot of times when you're going for these gigs, kind of as Aaron was alluding to a little bit, is you need to put the time and effort in to build the connections, to get to know people, to learn how to do this thing well. People aren't just going to come to you and hand you an opportunity. Some that does happen every now and again, but in general, it's a thing that you need to think about as an actual business that you were developing with real skills that you were developing.
And that I think is so important.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the things that you can do to help position yourself is by thinking about what you yourself individually bring to the table, mm-hmm. which gets into what you were talking about, Aaron, that we would discuss after the break, which is how to basically monetize yourself.
Yeah. This is hard. And this is where that imposter syndrome, if we thought it was bad when it was just your work, when it's you, I think it can be so much harder, because it's very easy to say, I say this all the time to myself, like, what am I saying that, like, you know, people want to spend money on? But I think you kind of have to, you know, put it out there and try. And so we've talked in the past about, I think one is newsletters and Patreons. That is who you are as a writer, as a creative, going out into the world and saying to people, do you want to help support me in doing this work? I don't know if y'all have any thoughts on that.
No, it's very much that. Like, when I first started doing the Patreon, I felt like I needed to do a lot of like, I'll send you a postcard in the mail. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was, actually, no, what people are showing up for is the expertise that I have from the time that I've spent. But I didn't feel like that's, like, I didn't feel like that was something I could commodify. And now I recognize that it is. At the same time, there are other things that I'm doing to diversify that income stream, where I'm using the skills that I have gained as a writer and stepping to the side with them. So some of it is teaching, some of it is public speaking, but some of it is the audiobook narration. Like, those are both forms of storytelling, and they are things that I can do in parallel. And so what I look for are additional skills that I have within myself that I can monetize that also refer back to the writing skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, one of those side things is actually I worked in nonprofit communications mm-hmm. for a while. It's something I had a bit of a background in, but also for me, there's a lot of creativity in the way there is in prose writing and creative writing. There's a lot of creativity in writing a newsletter article or, you know, writing about an issue. And so bringing those skills and the way that I think about writing into making you care about what is happening in a particular social justice issue mm-hmm. felt to me like the same skill set used in a different way. And there are people for whom this does not work, I will say.
Yeah.
There are folks for whom, if you write during your job, it is taking the writing out of your brain for the creative writing that you want to do later. For me, it really fed me because I was like, oh, I'm learning about all these really interesting issues in the nonprofit sector. And now I'm thinking about, ooh, what can I use? How can I use these as a way to build a world in a creative life? So I was able to both get money from it, but also use it as a way to feed my well, as opposed to, like, taking out of the well. That makes sense.
As writers of you know, big fictions, we're often told, you know, hey, come up with an elevator pitch for your book. Come up with a, you know, give us a 50-word description, whatever. There are businesses. I say there are businesses. Every business out there that makes a product has a need of good 10, 25, 50, and 100-word descriptions of their product. And nobody sweats words like an author who is trying to come up with a 50-word description of the novel they've spent the last decade on. If you've ever tried to do that for your own work, and then you look at somebody, you know, Widget Co.'s, you know, Wingnut product, whatever, you may find that it is super easy to write to spec marketing copy like that for people.
You know what? I'm going to jump in here because I'm going to say that the worst thing that a writer has to write is their own bio. If you can set up a business model where you will write bios for writers, I am certain that writers will flock to you and give you, I will fling money at you myself.
Business ideas, you heard it here first.
You know, as someone who writes a lot of book copy for other people, yes, it is a lot easier to describe someone else's book than describe your own. One thing I want to tag on to all of this, you know, we kind of hit a little bit on in-person appearances as one way to generate income. You know, Mary Robinette, I know you do a lot of conferences. I have a few clients who are very good at performance, and performance has been a big part of their role in their pre-writing life. And, you know, that has continued to be a source of income for them that is connected to their writing now, right? So my client Chuck Tingle went on tour earlier this year for the launch of his debut novel, Camp Damascus. And we were able to do a lot of in-person book events. But then also in a lot of those markets, he was also setting up additional events that were more of a personality event. There were ticket events where people came. They weren't associated with a bookstore about the book launch. It was more come see Chuck talk about XYZ or come see Chuck in conversation with somebody else. And those were ticketed things that we were able to do because he was a personality, because he was a brand and was able to drive that himself. If you're a YA, a middle grade author, my client, Mark Oshiro, does a lot with schools and libraries, does a lot of school visits that are often paid visits that you know, in part because Mark is great on stage, great at talking about things, used to, you know, have their own internet personality brand before they started writing novels. And so that has really dovetailed for them as a skill. Not everyone's going to be able to do that, but sometimes you can inventory what are things you're good at, what do you enjoy doing? Do you like being in front of a crowd? Are you good at public speaking? You can lean into that and make that a part of your writing life in a way that can be very financially rewarding and help build your brand, bring you new readers, and so on and so forth.
One of the things that I have, the things that has been very difficult for me is that appearance fee, because you can ask for an appearance fee. When you are going and you are appearing at a convention, particularly, I'm speaking specifically to those of you who are in a very particular place where you're starting to get guest of honor appearances, you can actually say, what are your usual appearance fees? Or you can say, my customary appearance fee is, and then name something, but I'm willing to work with you to fit within your budget. But the default that we have is that, oh, I can't ask for, you know, of course everyone else is volunteering and I should as well, but your time and energy, it's taking you away from writing.
This is reminding me of the idea of delegating to yourself, or also like almost creating a persona that does the things that you don't want to do. I'm thinking about actually when I was growing up, my parents had a really small business where they took orders like for records over the phone. And they were the only ones working there, but they actually had customer service names. Because if people thought they were talking to the owner, they would feel one way. But if they thought they were just talking to, like, some random person, they would be another. And so they would be like, oh, I'll relay that and, like, to
That's
themselves.
So funny.
But what's nice is, like, sometimes that other, you can kind of be like, well, I don't want to ask for that much. But, like, this other part of my brain that's, like, all about the commerce is going to be like, no, this is the rate and this is what I'm sticking to. And sometimes, like, that weird sort of putting it on the other part of yourself, being your own assistant almost, is a way to kind of make yourself feel it's not you doing it, it's the part of you that needs to eat doing it.
There are also speakers bureaus that will help you do this.
Yeah. The metric that I use for myself on whether or not I should invoke this is that I imagine it's like, okay, if a friend of mine were offered this opportunity, what advice would I give them?
Yeah. I've got several friends, we've all got friends who do speaking visits at schools. And the one common denominator I've seen among them all is if the school gives you any sort of speaking fee, any sort of appearance fee, they treat you so much better than
correct.
If you show up as a volunteer. You show up unpaid and they treat you like a substitute teacher. But if you've got a $50 appearance fee, suddenly you're a VIP.
It's $50, not just schools.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Cool. It's not just schools. But if many of you, if you want to write YA or middle grade, school appearances will become a big part of what you're doing. And early on, you need to be asking for those appearance fees just so you get treated well.
There's a weird inversion that happens. People value what they pay for, and if they're paying you a high fee, they will treat you in that sort of premium way. If you're being paid a very low fee, then that in their head, psychologically, that's what you're worth.
So you're just helping them treat you better by asking for more money.
Exactly.
That's right.
The last thing I want to get to before we close out this episode is about being a VIP in a different way, and that is fellowships and grants. There are people out there who will just pay you to be an artist in the world. We care about the arts sometimes more than others, but most states, if you're in the United States, counties, provinces, wherever you are, oftentimes your local jurisdiction will have some sort of arts council that cares about the arts and gives out money if you've lived in that area long enough. So try looking that up in your area and seeing what it is. It could be $20, it could be $2,000. A lot of it depends on where their arts funding is, and it can change year to year. But a lot of times, they really want artists to want to be in their community, and they will give money to you to continue to be an artist in your community. I'll give one sort of piece of, like, very practical advice. Sometimes these types of fellowships will ask for, like, I want to fund your project. And sometimes they'll be like, I want to fund you. And you're like, but I always want the money for me. So what I do is I will turn me into a project and I will say, you know what? I have to work, X number of hours a day to make money. And instead, if you pay me that hourly rate for X amount of hours, I can be creating art. And so it's an easy way when you don't have like tools or supplies the way that like a visual artist might, to say like, it's the time that's the thing. Pay me for my time and then you will get art back. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they don't actually need you to deliver a specific product. The point is that you got the money from them, that you thanked them. If you ever wrote a book after that, put them right in the acknowledgements. Couldn't have done it without local jurisdiction X. And there are also sort of bigger foundations and stuff. And we'll try to link to some resources in the liner notes of places you can find grants like this. But I would say, put yourself out there, do that thing where you write up who you are. And as an artist, like the same way you would for a book, you can do that for yourself and put it out there and find people who are willing to give you some of the money so that you can do the writing that you want to do.
There are national level organizations, there are private organizations, there are local organizations. All of these, many literary writers support themselves or fund a lot of, especially their early work, by going to these fellowships, these retreats, getting these grants. I always wish genre writers were more aware of them and knew how to pursue them. So I love that you're talking about this. And I hope people will start doing a little bit of research and finding ways to get access to those resources.
So I think that brings us to our homework. So Aaron was just talking about something that is called an artist statement. And while it sounds like a thing that is you will only need for writing grants, it's actually an extremely useful exercise to do for yourself. You'll hear businesses do like a vision statement, and an artist statement is very much the same thing. It's about who you are, what's important to you, what you're trying to put out into the world. So you can just Google artist statements, look at a bunch of examples of them, but take a moment. Write an artist statement for yourself, even if you're not planning on pursuing a grant. It will help you focus on what is important for you.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write an artist statement.
Hey, writer. Have you sold a short story or finished your first novel? Let us know. We love hearing about how you've applied the stuff we've been talking about to craft your own success stories. Use the hashtag WXSuccess on social media, or drop us a line at success@writingexcuses.com. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.